Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in the Cafe Book Club. We are doing Getting the Love You Want, Getting the Love You Really Want. It's like Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen Hunt. This has been a book that's been around for about 30 years. It's been through two rewrites, and my co-host tonight, Miss Michelle, was the one we really encouraged me to really take a look at it. And thank you, Michelle. Michelle is with us tonight. She's going to be my co-host. So how are you tonight,
yeah.
Michelle?
Oh, I'm doing well, and I think we have a really light and fun topic tonight.
Yeah, we're only talking about childhood wounds. I mean, that's going to be a quickie, right? Oh, my gosh. We started talking about it before the show, and I just said, you know, we started getting already into it. And I go, wait a minute. All this stuff would make really good radio. So let's not do that. So, oh, my gosh, we've got so much to cover. And, you know, I can't recommend this more highly than anything is, you know, because gosh, you can go to the library, all these kind of things. You could probably go and buy it on Amazon for, you know, in the used book section. You know, Getting the Love You Want is just one of those things that you really want. Now, this was the guide to couples, and just to kind of anybody who's just jumping on and they haven't really been going into what we're talking about, Harville decided to really write this book to where you wouldn't necessarily need a counselor to go through the book, because he felt like a lot of the stuff is things that just a couple can work with together. But through Michelle and I talking about it before we started the book club, we really realized that it's really every relationship. And we'll really kind of get into that tonight about some of these childhood wounds and how we really get into it. So right off the bat, I wanted to go ahead and read just this first paragraph, because it's just so powerful and really kind of talking about what we're going to dive into here. It says, when we hear the word psychology and emotional damage of childhood, you might immediately think about serious childhood traumas, such as sexual or physical abuse, or the suffering that comes from having parents who divorce or die or were alcoholics. And for many people, this is a tragic reality of childhood. However, even if you were fortunate enough to grow up in a safe, nurturing environment, you were still have invisible scars from childhood. Because from the very moment you were born, you were a complex, dependent creature with a never-ending cycle of needs. Freud correctly labeled us insatiable beings, and no parent, no matter how devoted, are able to respond perfectly to all these changing needs. And I was like, wow, that's such a powerful paragraph, but so true. And as we start going through all this different stuff. So what did you think of this chapter, Michelle? And you say it's such a light topic, you know.
I thought it was challenging to identify what I had created, because there's like three main things that we create in our personality, and I thought it was a challenge to identify what I had done in each of those. I could read it, but I found it challenging to look at myself and see what I had really created. But I thought it gave great insight as to why it would be challenging to have relationships with people because of what we're looking for from them.
Yeah, and that's one of the bottom lines with this whole thing is once we kind of start breaking down this whole thing, and Harville does a great job of literally really taking you from just being born to going through all these different stages of, you know, just the psychological needs we have as a child and how that develops as we get older, really looking at, you know, even trying to be a perfect parent, there's just no way as you're interacting with everything in your life that you're going to have your needs met. And, you know, just like, you know, Freud talked about being this insatiable being that's just looking to be, you know, just all of our needs being met. And through those things of getting or not getting really creates who we are as a being and a lot of the different
Welcome
things.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin.
let's turn that off. Hit the wrong button here. It's just like life. I hit the wrong button and all of a sudden other things start happening. But yeah, it just really triggered a whole bunch of stuff. So I don't want to kind of like skim over some of the beginning parts of it, because he does talk about, you know, being a child and all that, that, you know, we have these expectations in relationship because we basically come in just automatically assuming that a lot of our needs are going to get met. You know, here we came through the womb, taking care of us inside, you know, and we basically had our food. We were basically in this cocooned environment. But then, you know, once we go through the experience of being born, we've got all these things flung upon us. Literally, we've been pushed out into the world, and here you go. You got all these things happening. So I'm just going to kind of jump through all this different stuff. I mean, anytime you want to jump in with any kind of insights and stuff, Michelle, love for your insights on it. So we've got all these things that happen to us, and you know, we realize about our primitive awarenesses of who we are and how our parents are really kind of giving us stuff and all of our needs and things like that. But we come to this point that we start having these silent alarms that go off when we start, you know, really, I think a lot of it starts when we're a toddler and all of a sudden we're wanting to go be curious and like get off mom's lap and start going into another room, which means that a part of us, our sense of experience of like, if I go into another room, my mom disappears, you know, we kind of have that reality, and then coming back again. And depending on how our parents interact with us when we do or don't, can really be so life-changing. And boy, even from that, I mean, one thing about this chapter for me was just really looking at, oh, that's what's happened to me, or that's what happened to my siblings, or that's what happened to this person that I know that has these issues, these expressions in their personality, you know. And we'll talk about that too, because kind of jumping forward, there's different aspects of the way that we identify ourselves or other people identify us, and looking at what happened or what didn't happen to us and how we basically justify ourselves or try to explain ourselves or try to protect ourselves in the way that we act or don't act. So it's just all that, you know, being put into that. But, you know, we're down and we're a toddler, and so these little alarms go off inside of us when we are not really getting what our needs are being met. So, you know, we basically decide for ourselves that we're, you know, we get, you know, thwarted in our dependence. And we really look at that as, you know, do I stay or do I go, in a sense of how my parents react to me? And gosh, I think that was just such a profound thing to think about. It's like, was my mother more concerned about me leaving, or was it more, you know, with a sense of me not wanting to leave my mom? What about you, Michelle? Wasn't that something you just kind of looked at that and went, well, even from that choice, all these things start really kind of rippling out into our sense of who we are and how we're interacting with people?
Absolutely. And this is, in psychological terms, this is what we call attachment. It's how to be differentiated from another person and still feel safe. And if our needs aren't met, then we will adapt different ways to be in the world. But my mom told me when I was younger that she actually had all of her children close together in a row, because she came from a family that she didn't feel like there was closeness. So she wanted to have all of her kids close together so that she could feel closeness. So that just tells you where my mom was, that she was going to have children who were going to come into this world to make her feel that she has a close family, not realizing that, you know, we're coming in as dependent beings and that she's the one who has to provide a secure environment for us in order for us to have that closeness. So I saw where my mom got it wrong, like, you know, with the toddler leaving the room and the mom. I see it all the time. I'm out walking Mount Rubidoux here locally, and the parents are like, get off the rock, you're going to fall off the cliff. And the kids are having so much fun, and they're nowhere near going to fall over the edge of the cliff. But the parents are conditioning them, and they're going to create certain things in that child's personality because of the parents' fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Harville talks about... Go ahead.
Yeah. Harville talks about that with his daughter, where at one point she would just, she talked to the rocks, she talked to the leaves. She just like, she'd go and pet every animal that she saw. She just had just like this no fear and this wonder about life. And, you know, both, you know, the, her mom and dad, they both loved that about her. And little by little, she started interacting, you know, and she would have a dog that wasn't happy. And so she started fearing dogs, and she would slip, you know, at a pool or something. And then she became afraid of water. And, you know, little by little, all these things happened to where, you know, she, her sense of wonder just started, you know, closing in on her, to where there are a lot of phobias and things that she created just out of these experiences that she had a hard time shaking. So it's just really interesting, you know, and they really wanted her just to be open and to be enjoying life, but yet life is there, you know, talking back at her just to say, well, these are ways you can react to it. What are you going to do now? You know how that goes. But that's, that was really, really interesting.
Yeah, and they even talked about, you know, how aware and conscious they were as parents, but that sometimes they just didn't have the time or the energy to keep up with her sense of wonder, and they wouldn't be responsive to her, and that's, you know, then there the child has an unmet need. Not through any direct mistreatment or anything like that. It's just that the parents didn't have the energy to respond in a way that would fulfill the child's need. And so that will affect the child as they grow into an adult and to who they are in a marriage or in a relationship.
Yeah, it's so, to me, that's just so interesting. So when it comes to that, where we're talking about it, where, you know, here this parent is just not, wants to be dependent, more dependent than the child wants to be dependent. They're always like, afraid that something like we're talking about, you're at a park and you're going to fall and all that kind of stuff. A person can through those different choices, become an isolator as an adult. I thought that was really interesting. And then you've got the opposite.
An isolator or a fuser. Yeah.
Right. And then we're going to talk about the fuser. Right. And then a fuser is someone who basically has just this need, an insatiable need, just to have this closeness and the companionship. And then, you know, that's the typical, they're like we were talking before, there's not enough time for the child, you know, as the adults are just kind of saying, you know, pushing them away and not really giving them a lot of attention. So, you know, it makes me think about kids nowadays, how attentive some parents are and that kids can do no wrong. And I think it's going to be interesting to see as they grow to adults what that's going to turn into, you know. You know, will they be isolators? And then, you know, we've already kind of seen isolation because of through the internet and all these other ways that they're finding for a sense of being able to be minimizing their sense of closeness and companionship with people. So I think that we've already kind of seen that with the just a generation that is just using with the computer. So I think that's an interesting dynamic of bringing that in, of having that be a part of what's really kind of going on. Yeah, it's interesting. And then Harville goes on to talk about socialization, and, you know, here again at a school and all these different things that happen. And through the parents basically having everything kind of being happening to them, one of the stories was about this girl that basically her mother had always felt that she wasn't very smart. And she put that upon her daughter. And she was always telling her daughter, you know, you're going to have to go out in the world and marry somebody who's smart so he can care of you, because you're not going to be able to take care of yourself. And so, you know, here she was working in computer, you know, business, and basically she kept not trusting herself when it came to being able to be making choices. And so she'd always have to go to her senior, you know, manager or whatever to be checking all the time to say, you know, is that right? Is that what you want me to do? And so she kept getting left behind when it came to management positions because they didn't feel like she was, you know, she did great work, but she wasn't somebody who could take leadership. And that really stemmed from her mother not really teaching her that she couldn't do that. And really, this goes into this whole thing about how our gifts and talents, because of some of all these different stories that people tell us when we're little, whether it's a teacher or a coach or a parent or a caregiver, anybody like that, that basically they put their fears of acceptance and all these other things upon us. And so we basically minimize, you know, the different things that we have as a sense of ourselves, and we basically compromise them. and making it a way that we, you know, I don't do that so my mom can feel like, you know, there's a connection with me and it's not going against my mother. I can be this person that ultimately, you know, through my obedience, I'm getting a lost sense of myself. Gosh, that's just so heartbreaking to think that, you know, it's just something that we do in society and have that be something that's acceptable. So anything
well,
you want
to
share with that?
We have to because we're dependent upon them. So as a child, you will conform in order to get your needs met.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
dangerous not to.
Yeah.
And I can think in my family growing up, it was always all about scholastic achievement. There was no creativity, fun, spontaneous creation. None of that was ever validated or even offered as
mm-hmm.
an experience in my family. I didn't even know I was creative until I was like 20 years old.
Well, I think that's something that Michelle and I love to share with each other is creativity. And she loved to go to the flower shop and come and just play with the flowers or whatever. And for me, I always wanted to be painting on my walls and stuff like that when I was young. And my mom and dad wouldn't let me paint on the walls. And you go to my flower shop and I've got murals all over the walls and, you know, I do different stuff all the time. And I'm just thinking, yeah, it's just paint. We'll just paint it over again and do something else. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, being able to kind of, you know, it's that I'm an adult, but still there's parts of myself that I'm childlike. And I allow myself to have creativity and just be enthusiastic about life and not afraid to try something new. I mean, there's some, you know, they do all these research things. I think we've done shows on play, the science of play, and how important that is. And that's something that I really, really want to encourage people that I know and myself to be able to just, you know, just have days where we go and do that. And Michelle's really good about that, too. She's like, yeah, I'm coming over and we're going to have a project and we're just going to play and just put things together. I think that's really, really important. So, but going back to that socialization, one thing that came up for me when I was reading that is like, think about all these different parts of yourself. And to me, it was like unplugging yourself. I mean, they're still there. And your capabilities, it's like these things where, you know, somebody says, I want to write that book, or I want to, I don't know, but you know, whatever. There's this dream that all of us have of like, I want to do that thing, whatever that is. And it's just being able to plug that back into yourself. And for whatever that's going to take to do that, I think that sometimes it's just giving yourself permission that I'm going to plug it in and take one little action every day so I start doing what I really have a passion for and feeling like that's who I am and giving myself permission to do that. So I think that's just something that we can bring back to ourselves and have it be something that can heal and that we can support ourselves. So it's very interesting how a lot of this stuff goes into all this stuff. So, and, you know, that goes into what they, and that's part of what one of the first components that they talk about with he talks about these different ways that we fracture ourselves. It's a fractured part of ourselves, and it's called the lost self of these different aspects of ourselves that we make okay that we don't do that so another person can be comfortable.
Or well, you had to repress it because of the demands of society is how he defines it.
Right, right. And so that's a real big thing with that. So, and then the next aspect, he talks about taboos of society. And I love the story that he talks about. So he talks about these two mothers are out like on a sunny day on a porch, and one of the moms has a young baby. And the son feels so good, and it's so nice. She takes all the clothes off the baby, and she lets him roam around, little boy. And he's just enjoying the sun and getting his hands in the pots of flower pots and things like that. They're on the porch and things like that. And, you know, at one point he's hungry, so she just basically, you know, opens her shirt up and starts feeding the baby. And he winds up touching his genitals and things like that, and she doesn't stop him. So there's all these taboos that, you know, through society that somebody's like, well, you never have your kid naked and you wouldn't breastfeed out in public, you know, like even if it's like, you know, you want to do it in a secluded area and God forbid you wouldn't let your kids play with their genitals. That's not going to happen either. So it's like all these social rules that were automatically broken from just that one experience of this woman, you know, just allowing herself to be, you know, in this place of experiential, you know, and enjoy, I think, of, you know, having her little
exquisite
baby
sensation
with her. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What they call it, exquisite sensation. Yeah, we're taught like, no, That is not permitted.
Yeah.
Exquisite sensation. What? No.
What? Oh my gosh. That's not gonna be okay. What are you talking about? You're gonna have to pay darn good money for that. I don't know what you're talking about. But okay. Anyway. And that goes right into the next level, was like talking about forbidden feelings. And boy, you know, you can think about being a child and having that all happening, you know. It's in it, and it starts so innocently, and I know I'm guilty of this. It's just like, you know, especially when you have your child and you're trying to get him to laugh and you try to get him to smile, and you're just coaxing these positive feelings out of your child. And as they get older, of course, you know, you start shutting them down when they want to cry, you know, like, don't you cry, or don't you get angry, or whatever, and not letting them have the full spectrum of emotions. I think in society that's gotten better. I know, because like my kids are like in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s. So the changes of that when it comes to socialization have changed a little bit about it. I mean, I've always was, you know, tried to limit my level of like suppressing anything like that. But, you know, a lot of it could have been situations and things like that, depending on what we have. But I think that was such a good paragraph, you know, a little mini chapter within this conversation about this whole thing with these forbidden feelings. And boy, you just look at society and how many things have just been so suppressed to the point where, whether it be drugs or, you know, just anything that we can use for addictions, and have it be something people are using these things instead of just being able to just be, you know, real and authentic and just being able to talk about how they feel about things. I think there's just so much going on with that as well. So anything with that, Michelle?
I think it's rare for a parent to really take the time to let a child fully express what it is they're feeling and just validate it. Not that you even have to do anything, just let them know that they are listened to and respected. And that in and of itself helps them to maintain their wholeness. But I think parents get conditioned to being like the one who's right, the one who knows best, the one who is in charge and who is dominant, so that they don't really, you know, treat the child as an equal and let them just express and validate their expression.
Yeah, that sounds like such a foreign thing to a lot of people with their beliefs of parent-childhood relationships, you know, and it's like, my child's going to be my equal, right? Automatically,
yeah.
People go, what? Yeah, and it sounds so foreign to a certain level, like, well, I'm the parent and I know, kind of thing, instead of having it where you can have at least this conversation about, it reminds me of when we had done the pre-show with this, and Harville was talking about one of his sons didn't want to go to bed one night. And he wound up just talking to him about, okay, well, why don't you want to go to bed? Tell me what's that's all about. And he wound up talking to him about it. And before he knew it, his son went to bed because he just wanted to talk about it. It wasn't a matter of, like, you know, he's realized, well, yeah, maybe I am really tired. Maybe I do want to go to bed. But it was the fact that it's a way of getting attention, a way of being able to be having a conversation. It's like, you're telling me something. It's a way of me being able to, you and I can have a conversation. And then he wound up walking him to bed, and it was fine. You know, it was just like, oh, I hear you. And, gosh, you do seem kind of tired. Okay, well, why don't we go to bed?
Yeah. And the child is the equal, and the child does know what they need for themselves, and the parent is there to keep them safe as they find a way to help the child experience everything that the child already knows that's good for them. And the child, the parent and the child are equals, but the parent has been told that they get to do whatever they want to the child.
The other night Andy and I were out eating, and it was the same kind of situation. There was a little girl, she was about maybe 4. And they were having dinner, and she ate a little bit, but she didn't want to eat very much, and they kept forcing her to eat. And she just started crying, and she's like, I don't want to eat. I don't, you know, it's not that she, you know, and they were just like, you know, you got to eat. And they were making her eat, and she didn't want to.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't you pack it up and give it to her later, or just say, okay, well, this is your breakfast, or I don't know. It was like, you know, she didn't have to eat in that moment. You know, like, she knows how full she is.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we kind of just like looked at her and thought, well, we would have handled that a little bit differently. And she just was so frustrated because it was like they were just trying to get to pull their will. You know, their will was more wanting to be more dominant than what just acted like, just hear me. I'm done. I don't want to eat it anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah. And it's interesting because that actually brought up some stuff for my husband because he's Polish. And in Poland, they just like, you know, you got to eat. It's all about eating, eating, eating. Like eating is love, you know. So part of that's like they give you a plate. They expect you to finish your plate because that shows that you're appreciating somebody making it for you. And that, you know, and he would always just say, I never could finish. And they would make me sit there until I could finish it. And I'd be there for an hour or two just trying to nibble on my food.
Where's the love in that? Anyways.
Yeah, we're still loving that. So it was just a belief. Anyway, I was like, let's like put that away. Like, I guess you're done. You know, that's one thing with my kids. I really took that to heart, and I've never had it where, you know, my kids had to clean their plate. It's just like, well, eat what you want, and we'll, you know, that's okay. And, like, nowadays I love it because nowadays with most people, it's like you just get those smaller plates, and you put a little bit, so it's like everybody gets something. And if you want more, take more. I think that's a good way to handle it. It's like you don't have to have these huge plates of food. So it's just a different way of looking at it. So we have the lost self and then this false self, like we're talking about, where there's this whole idea of like, because all these different things happen, Harville talks about that we wind up creating this character structure that's kind of a double purpose, where we camouflage parts of ourselves and we also repress part of ourselves so we can protect ourselves from feeling like we're going to have any more, further injury in just all the ways that we're interacting with each other. So it gets very complex, you know, very complex with this whole thing. And so it's just this false self of not really knowing who I am. And gosh, you think of all these people, you know, there's so many people just like, you know, what's my purpose? And I don't know why I'm here. I think that's part of that. It's part of that whole, you know, I've suppressed myself to the point where I don't really know why I am here. I'm basically just protecting myself instead of having it be something where I can speak my mind and not feel like I'm going to get ridiculed or attacked. Mm. That's very interesting as well. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it really goes into all those different things. So, you know, it raises, that was a really interesting section to me because it really raised the whole thing about, it talked about a mother that, she raised her child. She raised her son to be sexually repressed in her family. She didn't approve of it in the way that it looked at it, and so they had different scenarios of what that would look like in a, you know, in a person's, how they would handle that, you know, when our parents basically having already attitudes or social roles about stuff. And so a mother would basically be, you know, repressive in her sexuality, and so the son would become a tough guy, and he would think sex was, you know, dirty or wrong. And then you'd have this partner that was the opposite, where she would look at that and just say, well, you know, I'm attracted to you. And he's just like, you're, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, you're over, you know, an oversexed gal here. What's going to happen with all this kind of stuff? So all these judgments and things start happening when you've got these, you know, foundations that basically are challenging something of like what you're not really, you know, who you really aren't, you know. And I mean, you start looking at this and you're like, oh, gosh, this is generational. And how many generations does it go back? And, you know, I don't know why, but I'm thinking of Moses in the desert, you know, and they always talk about, you know, maybe the reason, you know, they were in the desert for so long is a lot of those attitudes had to die because they all wanted to go back and be slaves because at least that's what they knew. Mm. Instead of having to go to this new world and being able to change and stuff like that. So we got about a minute left with the show, so like this goes so fast. And then the third one is the disowned self, and that was really interesting too. About, you know, you really come to this, you just send this message where you're just not yourself at all. You know, you're putting these whole things off on yourself. So, really want to make sure that encourage everybody to go to the exercise is really really great for this one. It's the childhood wound exercise number 2, on page 249, and you just get yourself in this place of being really quiet and putting yourself back into remembering what it was like when you were little. Go to your home, your home as a child, and then, you know, just working your way back to all these people that you interacted with, and you speak to them from a present moment, which I thought was so powerful. Have you done that, Michelle?
Yes.
What did you think of that exercise?
I had a challenge finding the positive things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's just something you could go back over and over again and look at it. I mean, you visit that person once, and then you go back to it again and look at it with all these different people. So, you know, it's just, I loved it because you said, you know, stop and visit each one, note whether you have a positive or negative trait with that from that person, and then tell them about what it was like being with them. Tell them what you wanted from them that you never got, and don't hesitate to share if you were angry, hurt, or sad. And, you know, with the exercise, you know, look at the insights of, you know, what that was really about for you. Like, oh, gosh, that is such a powerful, you know, way of being able to look at somebody now from a perspective of who you are, especially being able to be mad or to tell somebody how they really were with you and really own it in a way like, you know, you were wonderful in, you know, the way that you helped me to take care of myself, but you really sucked in the way that you would tell me things. And how you didn't really take my feelings into consideration, you know, things like that. That's just so powerful to be able to look at that stuff. So the next chapter we're going to be getting into is going into the Imago. And that's this. You love the Imago. That's one thing she was sharing with me when we. She loves this chapter. You really start looking into the. Through all these different things through this chapter of finding, you know, why you've done what you've done with some of these things, whether it was with a lost self or false self or disowned self. These are things that you actually attract when you're looking for relationships to complete yourself. And Harville also talked about the last thing he had in this chapter was talking about Plato, and Plato had talked about this really great story of this analogy of that at one time we were multiples. We were androgynous and had, you know, forearms and heads and all that different stuff. And we were empowered and we basically challenged the gods. And Zeus and, you know, and the gods decided to split us. And I think that's a great, you know, when it comes to a sense of self, the split self, looking for your soulmate, as they call it, being able to complete yourself. And he said, you know, that's, you know, once these wounds have occurred, we're really looking to somebody to come and help us to feel like I have a sense of completeness, and it's actually things that we can bring to ourselves. And I think that awareness in itself is very empowering, to realize it doesn't necessarily have to come from another person. So.
And the reason we're looking for another person, the special person, can't be just anyone. It's what happens is we say, this is the one who will make up for the wounds of the past.
Right. Right. No pressure. No pressure there. You're just going to do it. You're going to do it in your sleep. It's going to happen so fast. Anyway. Well, we want to thank you guys all for joining us. And I said, like I said, this next show that we do with the Imago is Michelle's favorite. So we're definitely going to be
the amigos
are going to be doing the Imagos. So thank you all for joining us. And, you know, as always, if you have any questions, comments, please let us know. And thank you, Michelle, for coming and joining
us.
You're a wonderful co-host. Yeah. And we'll see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.